Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome to another edition of The Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. I am your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, as promised, it's an NBA trade deadline edition of The Beer Garden. We'll be talking with John Hamm of the franchise OKC in Oklahoma City. He's also part of Bleacher Report, and he is a part of the Dream Team podcast with Royce Young and Andrew Schlecht and Brett Dawson, OKC Dream Team. It's a fantastic podcast if you like basketball. Yes, it's Thunder specific, I should say, but they talk about a lot of other things as well. We'll get all of John's thoughts on the trade deadline, 24 hours, about 24 to 48 hours away by the time you hear this. What happens with Anthony Davis? What happens with Mike Conley, Mark Gasol? There's a lot going on around the NBA this time of the year. It's always fun to chat about it. It's the best reality show in all of sports, the NBA is. First, let me tell you about the Oxford Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford. It is right next door to the Oxford Exxon. Right now at Crystal, you can get 10 crystals for $6. Maybe you're getting ready for a weekend of college basketball, watching some NBA, whatever it may be. They get you taken care of there at Crystal. You can pick any five for $5.55. You want to get a chick, you want to get a crystal, you want to get a corn dog, a corn pup, whatever it may be. Five items for $5.55 all day at Crystal. And of course, if you want to grab a breakfast there, the three egg plate combo is the way to go. Features fresh cracked eggs, Gold Peak coffee there, and then if you just want to get the square meals, you can get the $2 square meal, the $3 square meal, the $4 square meal, all of that at Crystal, Highway 6 West in Oxford, right next door to the Oxford Exxon. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi, 662-257-1900. Call the number, ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's easy. It's right to the bottom line. No hassle. No haggling. You get your quote, and you can shop it around all you'd like, or you can go ahead and let Corey and the people at Clark Ford do for you what they've done for me and so many others who've listened to our family of podcasts that take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. You get a great deal, great service. Corey wants to be your car guy. He wants to be your truck guy. He'll prove it to you. 662-257-1900. At the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on The Beer Garden, and you'll save $500 off the already great bottom line. Coming to you from as presented by LB's Meat Market. LB's in Oxford, just across from Kroger, 2008 University Avenue, 662-259-2999. Call Greg Jones, tell him what you want. He'll have it ready for you. You can go in, pick it up, or you can do what I love to do, and that's just go in and browse. They have the freshest cuts in Oxford. It's fantastic product. Oh, no matter what you're looking for, whether it be beef, pork, chicken, seafood fresh from the Gulf, sausages, whatever it may be, they've got it there at LB's. Plate lunches. Grab a six-pack out of the beer fridge. Tell Greg that you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden, and that six-pack is just $6 at LB's Meat Market, 2008, University Avenue in Oxford, 662-259-2999. Also coming to you from Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County in Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in condo financing in the Oxford markets. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. J-Lowe, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. And last but not least, this show is sponsored by Strategic Partners and Media. It's a full-service advertising agency that works with businesses of all types, big or small, from Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here's why SPM is really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out. The writing, the production, the editing is done solely by their staff and crafted uniquely for their clients. And lastly, an Ole Miss grad and a Mississippian is a partner in the firm. So get in touch with them and see just how great they are. It's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Now let's go to NBA insider John Hamm, the latest on the NBA trade deadline as Thursday afternoon's deadline approaches. Here's John. All right, John, really appreciate you taking some time on what I know is a busy day, a busy time for you. We'll start with the obvious place to start, which is where everyone in the NBA is starting right now, and that's Anthony Davis. The Lakers, depending on who you believe, have offered pretty much half their roster, a couple of stray dogs, a partridge in a pear tree, whatever, for Anthony Davis, for Solomon Hill. I guess here's the best question. If you're in charge of the New Orleans Pelicans today, they've been listening to you on the OKC Dream Team. They've been listening to you on the flagship, and they've been listening to you reading you on Bleacher Report, and they say that Ham guy knows salary cap. He knows how to do this. Let's make him the GM. What are you doing today? I mean, you've got roughly 48 hours as we're taping this to make a decision. Are you taking the Lakers offer? Are you rolling the dice and getting this thing into July to see what Boston and maybe others are willing to offer you?
Yeah, I mean, look, the advice that I have is the advice that a lot of people have, and that's to try to hold off on this. I mean, this Lakers offer isn't going anywhere. It's not like the Lakers can say, well, if you don't do this, we're going to take Brandon Ingram off the table. Okay, then you don't get Anthony Davis. to me, it's just so much more could open up for them when you get to the offseason. Now, to be completely fair to the people in charge, there can be sometimes some pressure that we're not aware of, pressure from Clutch Sports. You know, who knows what they're telling the Pelicans, threatening them with, you know, future business down the line, potentially. You don't know what the appetite is to basically, you know, send Anthony Davis home for a few months at the end of the season and endure some of the backlash from that. So, I mean, there are some reasons where the Pelicans could cave. I hate to use that word, but I mean, it is, I think, kind of true to where they kind of cave and make a deal. But man, it seems like that a whole new world would open up if you get to the offseason, know what the draft order is, get Boston involved as a bidder, and it should help everything out for them. And that Lakers offer is still going to be there.
Let's talk about that offer if we can. You see these guys a lot. You see the Lakers a lot covering a Western Conference team. It's a voluminous offer, obviously. All the jokes about all the stuff that's in it. There's a couple of picks in it that the picks might not be very good picks. It's a couple of veterans and Lance Stephenson who am I forgetting? I mean, there's just a bunch of
Rondo potentially.
Yeah, Rajon Rondo's in the deal, and I mean, Rajon Rondo's a good player, but the peak of his career is in the rearview mirror. It's got Ingram. It's got all the problems that come with Lonzo Ball, that come with his family. It's got Kuzma, who's a nice player. I mean, Kuzma's a nice piece. But in reality, when you boil that offer down and you kind of take the fat off of it, how good of an offer is it?
Well, I mean, now you've got the team that, like, lost to Cleveland recently. You know, I mean, that's the thing of it is there's got to be a healthy medium here, because I think there's some Laker exceptionalism that talk about – I mean, because these are young kids. They are, you know, likely to get better when you talk about a 23-year-old Kuzma, 21-year-old Ingram, 20-year-old – or 21-year-old Lonzo Ball. You know, it stands to reason they're going to get better. But you know, the people out there that just think it's like just a trash heap, I mean, it's not that either. I think they're good players. I don't know if these are franchise cornerstones. You know, maybe these are guys you bring in and you try to ship them off somewhere else to get some more stuff down the road. But yeah, I mean, they're perfectly fine. But like you say, there are some drawbacks. I mean, already you've got Lonzo's dad out there trying to get him to Phoenix. because I guess that's an organization that knows what they're doing. I have no idea where that came from. So when you look at it, what the Pelicans, I think, have said through all of this back and forth through the media, the Pelicans have basically said, like, they need a bunch of stuff and cap relief. And so that's where some of those veterans you mentioned, that's where they come in, just to get, because they're expiring contracts, to get Solomon Hill's contract off the books. To get some draft picks, even though they wouldn't, you know, they're not likely to be great picks. Who knows? I mean, that, you know, 4 years down the road, it might turn out to be okay. But, I think the Pelicans are basically like, here's how I described it this morning. I think the Lakers have set the fire, and now they're offering to sell you the water to put it out. And the Pelicans are a little bit ticked about that, and I think rightfully so.
That was kind of leads me into my next question that I wanted to ask, which is, what is the feeling around the league? And look, I mean, we know how agents run sports. I get it. I mean, Scott Boras has a big role in Major League Baseball. He shapes a lot of things, and if you piss off Scott Boras, there's a decent chance that you're going to pay for it somewhere down the line. I get it. That being said, what is the feeling around the NBA, if you've been able to sort of take that temperature, about the way this has been done with Clutch Sports, with Rich Paul, with what is LeBron? There's obviously been a lot of tampering. That's clear. And there's always a little tampering, but this is over the top tampering. I'm guessing from listening to your show and listening to other shows and just talking to people around the league a little bit, that there's a real anger about the way this has been done, and that maybe there's a sense that around the league people are telling the Pelicans, hey, do us all a favor and don't go here right now.
I think that there is some I think there is some resentment to, I mean, let's face facts. The Lakers were fined $500,000 for tampering with Paul George when he was with the Pacers. That's documented. That was a thing. I think there's a belief, even though they were never fined for it officially, that there was some behind the scenes stuff with Kawhi Leonard. I think they feel the same way here now with Anthony Davis. And I think there's a lot of people that are really hesitant to give in and give the Lakers what they want, especially with what they have to offer. I mean, Neil, if they had slightly better players, if they had Jason Tatum, for example, to offer, maybe this gets done. I think there's kind of this belief of, you're trying to give me two quarters for my $1 and trying to force me into a corner. And I don't think it's going over very well, and it's making teams not want to do business with the Lakers at the moment. And it's tough. I mean, I've talked about too, the balance. I've talked about this recently, the balance of, like, players have had to fight so hard for whatever rights they can get. You know, once upon a time, there was no free agency. It took, you know, Curt Flood in baseball, Oscar Robertson in basketball, you know, to sort of gain that and fight for it. So there are some ways that players have to say, you know what, this is not where I want to be. This is not where I want to be in my career. I want to go somewhere else. And there's not a pretty way to do that. There's just not. But it does feel like, you know, the way that Clutch has decided to handle this, I don't think it's going over well. And it really feels like that they are trying to, you know, they've laid this all out to force him to one location only. And, it's not going over well. It's just not. So I don't know. It's an unfortunate, ugly situation. But like you say, sometimes agents have to play that way to get what they want.
Let's just say, for the sake of this, hypothetically, that the deal as reported to be constructed gets done. Anthony Davis goes to L.A., joins up with LeBron. They'd still have a few pieces. They'd obviously have to go add some other players elsewhere. What does that do? What does that do in a vacuum to the Western Conference race?
I mean, I think depending on who else they get, and look, who else they get could be Carmelo Anthony, right? It could be J.R. Smith. It could, you know, it's probably going to be guys that LeBron is going to somehow be able to squeeze something out of on the basketball court. I do think it is a move that in the short term makes Los Angeles, I mean, suddenly a Western Conference threat. I do believe that if you put LeBron and Anthony Davis together, get enough role players, someone to guard a point guard, find some more offense here and there, I mean, LeBron's taken scraps to the finals. And that leftover scraps is not doing a whole lot in Cleveland right now. I think it's something that, you know, next season, obviously you're going to have a really good team as well. And there's going to come a point, LeBron is eventually going to taper off at some point, and Davis would ideally be hitting his prime and be able to pick it up at that point. It's a deal that I think could have significant ramifications in the Western Conference. So, you know, and look, for the Pelicans too. And I think that's the other thing. I don't know that the Pelicans are real excited about building a superpower within their own conference, by doing that. So that's how big of a deal I think this could be if you saw LeBron and AD pair up.
Okay, let's say on the other side that this doesn't go down, that Anthony Davis Thursday afternoon at 2:05 or whatever is still a member, although a very disgruntled one, of the New Orleans Pelicans, and they go into the offseason. Obviously, Rich Paul put out the list of four teams. The thought of Anthony Davis and Giannis together is amazing. It's not going to happen, but it would be,
right.
Wow, what a pairing
right.
That would be. But if you're a team like Boston or even like Milwaukee, are you at all emboldened by what's happened with Paul George in Oklahoma City, by what I guess could conceivably happen with Kawhi Leonard in Toronto, or do you have to almost take Rich Paul and Anthony Davis sort of at their word that, hey, unless it's the Lakers or the Clippers, or unless it's Milwaukee or maybe the Knicks, who I'm going to ask you about in a minute, do you just have to say we can't go there? And I guess what I'm getting at is, if you're the Celtics, and again, this is difficult to completely answer early in February because you don't know what Boston does or doesn't do in the playoffs in this scenario, but if you're Boston, do you run the risk of trading a young talent like Jason Tatum for what could potentially be just 1 year of Anthony Davis?
Yeah, see, the short answer, I think, is yes. And some more kind of, you know, thoughts on that. You mentioned that list that came out yesterday. A lot of people picked up on this, that the teams on that list really didn't have anything to offer to realistically get Anthony Davis. I mean, I thought that was kind of some showmanship.
It was propaganda.
You know, to try to somehow prove. Exactly. So there's that. And then in terms of taking that risk, I remember in the preseason, I think it might have been Eric Horn, or one of the reporters here, asked Sam Presti about, did he think that his willingness to take that chance on Paul George, you know, has emboldened other GMs to do it. You know, Sam deflected, which is not unusual, but he said, you know, every situation is different and every team is different. And he's right in that aspect, because like you just mentioned, you're talking about a different set of representation here. You're talking about a different caliber of player here. But I mean, having said all of that, I've been saying for a while now, you know, a few months is an eternity in the NBA. You know, 1 year is like double eternity, I guess. Just so much can change in that amount of time. So you always hear this stuff about player X doesn't want to go to team Y, and it'll happen, and it works out. So why not take that chance? I mean, Anthony Davis is one of these, you know, generational talents, and at 25 years old, I think you take that chance. If you wind up losing him, you know, well, c'est la vie.
Yeah, the scared money don't make money, I think is the T-shirt that's out there, and it's an interesting philosophy, because in so many ways it's true. I mean, you're either competing for a championship or you're not, and you know, and I mean, I watched Boston the other day, and look, Tatum's awfully good, but he's just another piece on that team. You know, I mean, if you were to take Jason Tatum off that team today and put Anthony Davis on it, they would not only be the favorite in the East, they would be a legitimate contender against the Warriors in a hypothetical finals.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, that type of player is what changes your fortunes in the NBA. And Boston knows this firsthand from going out and making that trade for Kevin Garnett. And really, he was the piece that, you know, put that three-headed team Celtics forward. I mean, Paul Pierce was already there. They traded for Allen, but it was KG coming in that really tilted the scales in their favor. it's that type of player. You know, Presti one time had described that there's not many humans on this earth that can impact the game of basketball like a Paul George or like a Russell Westbrook, well, or like an Anthony Davis. So some of these things are risks worth taking. Sure. You would love for it to be a longer contract or more of a guarantee that the guy is going to stay. But I think you have to take that chance. And, you know, I'll say this for Danny Ainge too. He has been criticized for being too conservative, and maybe for good reason. I mean, he apparently never really got in on the Paul George sweepstakes, never really dived in on Kawhi. I think this, if he gets the opportunity, this is no time to be timid. I think this is the type of guy that this is what you've been saving your war chest for.
They have much better assets, too. They've got that Memphis pick that could potentially convey in a couple of years as a top five pick, depending on what happens with the Grizzlies. I'm going to ask you about them in a minute. I mean, they can put together a much more attractive package than anything really the Lakers can do, right? It's just a matter of whether New Orleans is willing to wait.
Yeah. Right, yeah, and that's what most observations have said, is that when you look at, let's see, Boston has got, I mean, they've got a pick coming from the Clippers at some point. They've got that pick from Memphis. They've got a pick, I believe, from Sacramento is how it's going to boil Kings. Down, even though that one, the Kings suddenly turned good, so that may not be as great of a pick. They've got their own draft picks. They've got, you know, again, they've got Jaylen Brown. They've got Tatum and a bunch of other young guys, and it's fair. I mean, I've seen some people from sort of carrying the Lakers water, start matching up. Well, is Ingram really better than Jaylen Brown? This, that, and so forth. I mean, that's a perfectly valid point, but I think the Celtics can offer more flexibility in terms of those draft picks. And I mean, those are pieces that the Pelicans can either use on their own or package in other deals and try to rebound quickly. I feel like there probably is the possibility of better stuff, more quality stuff, if you can wait it out and let Boston come in as a bidder.
The Knicks did the deal with Kristaps Porzingis. He goes to Dallas. A whole bunch of pieces moved around, but the two big things that came out of that were Dallas got Kristaps Porzingis to team up with Doncic, which will, at the very minimum, make them fascinating to watch. And then in New York, it clears up a team that's got a hell of a shot to win the lottery or to finish in the top two or three in the lottery. In New York, they get two max salary spots going into the offseason. And I think everybody knows Kevin Durant's going to be a free agent. It appears he's likely to leave Golden State. That's certainly reading the tea leaves. That's what it looks like. Kyrie Irving's a free agent. I don't know what Kyrie's going to do. That's where the Knicks could get involved, right, with this Anthony Davis thing, and that they could offer the number one or number two pick. They don't really have a lot of other pieces, but they could, I guess, could make it a complicated deal. But the Knicks suddenly go into the offseason. They're not interesting right now, but when the calendar turns to June and July, there's going to be a lot of interest in what does or doesn't happen in New York, I would think.
Yeah, and I mean, there was a report that the Knicks apparently did offer Porzingis to the Pelicans for Davis and were turned down. And I think a lot of that may be because of we don't know where their pick is going to land yet. If it was already decided, it's going to be the number one overall pick, maybe that's the trade that gets done. But not knowing until June is going to throw that off a bit. But yeah, I mean, if New York, if they do wind up, and again, the lottery odds have changed. They could easily wind up with the number five pick after all this horrible basketball they've played this year. But if they do get a top one, probably top one, maybe top two. I think Zion is more the lure. I think Zion Williamson is much more attractive than like a Cam Reddish, for example. But, then they could look at, Dennis Smith Jr. I don't know if the Pelicans want him, but maybe they could trade him somewhere else to get another piece to send their way. They would be probably in position to absorb that contract of Solomon Hill that was mentioned, and then still have the space to go sign one big free agent like a Kevin Durant, like you mentioned. So can't rule them out completely, but again, we just don't know until the end of the season, which is another reason why, the Pelicans have some incentive here to push this off if they possibly can.
Memphis, on the other hand, John, would prefer not to wait until after the season. They've got
– Yeah.
It's as we tape this, it's Tuesday. The Grizzlies come to Oklahoma City on Thursday. there's no telling what Grizzlies team you see on the floor that night against Oklahoma City. What's the kind of the word around the league? You and I talked about this right before we got started. I was filling in for Gary Parish in Memphis last week. I talked to Tony Jones of The Athletic, and there was a lot of talk then, and there still is to a large degree, about Mike Conley going to Utah, and I think that's a great fit. Yet that's not done here as of Tuesday afternoon. And then the Mark Gasol talk, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot happening under the surface, but in terms of what's bubbling to the surface, the answer is not much. What do you think happens with Gasol, with Conley? And if you're Memphis, just how much of a crossroads is the next 48 hours or so for that franchise?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a bummer to see that grit and grind there. I mean, it had to come to an end at some point, and some might argue that it was already over the moment that Zach Randolph and Tony Allen left. But it does kind of feel like the last hurrah. And look, that's an expensive team Memphis has got. I mean, Conley is you know, earning over $30 million a season. You've got that contract of the banished Chandler Parsons that's hanging over their head. And I remember a comment that an executive made to me a couple of years ago that I don't know how Memphis is keeping the lights on. So, I mean, if there is some, you know, any sort of, I don't know, I don't want to say like they're going broke, but I mean, if there's any financial struggle at all, they might have incentive to just go ahead and try to do what they can, pull the plug. And it's unfortunate, but you know, a guy like Conley, they can put him in a more competitive situation. I love that fit in Utah. If they pull that off, and Memphis would probably just get back expirings and maybe a future draft pick to make it work. Gasol is a little more, I understand there's probably more sentimental value there since he has ties to them dating back to high school. You know, it feels like another team out there. I think Gasol's got an option on his contract. He could be a free agent at the end of the season. But I mean, it feels like that there's another team somewhere that, you know, would go ahead and try to upgrade a position somewhere and bring him in and see if they can't put themselves over the hump. I don't know exactly. I threw out Milwaukee one time as an option. I kind of got laughed at when I brought that up. You know, I've even thought about like Toronto, if you could send him up there. I think that there's some places you could send him, and I don't know if the Grizzlies would get a lot back, or maybe it's not worth doing. I don't know, but maybe there's some value in just putting these guys in situations where they can kind of get back to their winning ways.
Here's what's interesting. This is the NBA season's always interesting. This year, there's still yet another year. This last season, I'm long-winded going into a question, I promise. It feels like this is the year that everybody still goes, hey, it's still Golden State title to lose. They'd have to get hurt. Something will have to go wrong. They added DeMarcus Cousins to a star-studded lineup, and unless everything just goes to hell, they're going to win another title. Even if that's true, if Durant leaves after this year, the Warriors go from being a all-time great team back to, hey, they're still a very, very good team. They're still a contender, but they would be somewhat fallible at that point. The West has these teams like Denver and Oklahoma City and Houston that appear to be maybe a piece away. The ceiling would fall to them to some degree. If you put Kevin Durant in New York, along with maybe Kyrie or Anthony Davis or whatnot, you still have that young Bucks team, assuming they can hold on to Chris Middleton. Does the NBA next season, if Kevin Durant is not in Oakland, San Francisco, wherever, if he's not there, is it more teams that have a legitimate chance to win the title than we've seen in, what, 4, 5, 6 years?
It could very well be. I mean, it could be since Golden State emerged on the scene kind of out of nowhere in Steve Kerr's first year and made that title run. The NBA is very close to getting back to having, you know, some more parity again. And people are going to argue whether that's good or bad. There is an appeal to, you know, to dynasties. Even if they're loved or hated, I mean, that's still something that, you know, kind of drives a league there. And there's some that argue that parity is not all that. But I'll just tell you, back in 2011, the owners threw a big fit because Miami got the big three and basically started putting in a bunch of rules to try to keep that from happening again, to try to, you know, dissuade teams from stockpiling talent. And then a giant loophole was blown open in 2016, and they didn't close it. But it feels like we're getting back to that point to where it's going to be really hard to keep 3 and 4 all-stars on your team. Maybe guys want to spread out and do a little bit more than being on a stacked roster. Feels like we're close. And if so, yeah, then suddenly you've got a number of teams. And I'll just tell you, earlier this season, especially when Golden State was, you know, at 4-5 in the Western Conference, you know, that's when suddenly there was like this spark of excitement across the league from people like, wow, you know, like every night there was, there was a different thought on who could emerge out of all this. We knew Golden State would eventually get it together, but I think maybe everyone might be ready for that kind of wonder again, right? Who is going to emerge now that Golden State is not just completely unbeatable? Although I think Golden State could bring back Curry, Clay, Draymond, make a really good mid-level exception signing, make a couple of smart trades, and still be excellent. But again, like you say, just not invulnerable.
So there's going to be so much focus in the next 48 hours on Anthony Davis, and rightfully so. But there's a bunch of teams that, yeah, you know, if they could add a piece and then, you know, catch a break in May, maybe they could, you know, lightning in a bottle, all that kind of stuff. You know, Denver, Toronto, Philly, Portland, which just added Rodney Hood. I don't know what impact that may or may not have. You cover one of those teams in the Thunder that probably are a shooter short. Are there some players you're watching, teams you're watching here in the next 36 to 48 hours that could, you know, really help themselves and position themselves better going into the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, looking at the West, it doesn't feel like Denver is going to do anything unless it's like pushing in all the chips to try to get in on Davis. I mean, I feel like that they've got a really good team that they've sort of built over the years, and maybe they just kind of want to let that continue. Portland, you mentioned the trade for Hood. There's talks that they want to add more than that, so they may try to reinforce themselves even more. Houston's going to try to do something. I mean, they've been tinkering all year, so I don't see that stopping anytime soon. And look, even Utah. I mean, Utah is, as of today, they're number 7 in the West at 30-24. Their schedule is going to be very forgiving the rest of the way. They had a difficult start to the season from a scheduling standpoint. If they do make a trade for Conley, you know, that's a team that could start rocketing back up the charts again. So
he really fits there, doesn't he, Conley?
I think so. I really do. You put him next to Donovan Mitchell, and look, you know, obviously being, you know, covering the Thunder like I do, I got to, you know, I saw a lot of Mike Conley in the playoffs over the years, and, you know, just have a world of respect for that guy and how he plays. So, yeah, there's a lot of moving and shaking. So you talk about Oklahoma City. You know, there's not a lot of trade chatter with them right now. You hear a little bit, so they've been, you know, reportedly linked to Wes Matthews if he gets bought out by the Knicks. I kind of feel like that might be how Oklahoma City goes about it. I'm still doubtful that they do something that really shakes up the rotation, you know, like trading a couple of key rotation guys or going out and making some kind of a blockbuster. But I think they could get in on the buyout market. And some of it too, Neil, you know, we talked about Golden State obviously is, you know, playing the way they are. I don't think there's as much urgency from a lot of teams to go all in right now. Maybe next season's different. Maybe teams get a little more frisky next season if the field is opened up a little bit more. I think there's still, you know, this sort of understanding that this Golden State thing needs to finish and we don't have to do anything, you know, desperate at the moment. So, and maybe it's good for Oklahoma City to let some of these young guys go through the rest of the season, go through the playoffs, and that'll prepare them better for the next year or two down the road.
You watch Russell Westbrook night in, night out. He's still incredibly impactful. I mean, he's averaging a triple-double, and he still does amazing things. His shot is off. I mean, there's no question about that. Is there any sense there in Oklahoma City that this is the beginning of some decline? He's got a 3 after his number now, you know, after his name. He's in his very early 30s. Is there any sense that, hey, you know, this could be the new Russell Westbrook, or is it more of a sense that, hey, you know, he had his knee operated on, Then he immediately suffered a pretty rough ankle sprain. Maybe he's just physically not quite back. What's just kind of the feeling there about him?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone is sort of feeling like, oh no, this is, you know, this is an aberration, and you know, it's not going to continue like this. And there may be a kernel of truth to that. I mean, Russ has never been an accurate shooter in his career. So, I mean, you would kind of understand that this is probably what his shooting stats would look like in a decline. But he does have the injuries, as you mentioned, which I think, you know, could be playing a factor in this whole thing as well. It's tough. And I'll say this too, because a lot of people do focus on the shooting, and I've seen a lot of people, you know, compare Russell shooting this season to like the final seasons of Michael Jordan or Allen Iverson or Kobe Bryant. Like, those dudes weren't doing anything else to help their team. Russ is still doing a number of things, not just on the stats page. I mean, I've seen this guy, you know, leap for rebounds at critical moments of the game, just, you know, mustering that kind of out of nowhere, you know, on the floor for loose balls in critical situation. Like, he's doing a number of other things that don't show up in the box score that, you know, are helping this team. So the shot's off, that's a problem. It's something they're going to have to work around. But he is doing a number of other things. And I think sometimes there's some cottage industries out there that get focused on their one area of interest and don't tend to look at the bigger picture here, that even a poor shooting Russell Westbrook is a guy that, you know, it's one of those guys you want on your basketball team if you want to pursue NBA titles.
Last thing, looking at it today, let's say nothing happens of significance here in the next 2 days before the trade deadline. Is there a team in the West that, if they caught a break, could knock off Golden State? And then is there a team in the East in the finals that could have a shot?
I'll put it like this. I really like Milwaukee, and I've liked them, you know, for a good part of the season. Early on, when I was looking at, you know, because they were blowing out teams by 10 plus points, and I thought, well, let's see if this holds up. It's holding up. And even, you know, Milwaukee came to Oklahoma City recently and the Thunder beat them. But that was still an impressive Bucks team. So they may just very well kind of sneak on the scene like the Warriors did a few years ago. Yeah, I like them. And look, I like the matchup of the Bucks versus the Warriors if it came down to it. With, you know, they're just limbs everywhere, could switch everything, and could probably give the Warriors some headaches. So I'm very high on the Bucks team. But, yeah, in the West, you know, I feel like this Thunder team, they've slipped defensively, especially the past 10, 15 games. If they can get back to where they were and maintain some level of this newfound accuracy they found shooting the basketball, if they can find a happy medium there, you know, this is a team that, with Paul George playing the way he is, Steven Adams impacting like he is, Terrence Ferguson emerging on the scene as a legit 3-and-D threat for this team, and if Russ can keep his head on straight and not Hulk out on people, I think the Thunder could get in this. I really do. So much of it depends. As much as I just praise Russell Westbrook, you know, he's got to keep it. He's got to keep his cool. He can't go off on a random role player in a critical 7-game series. There's something to work with there in Oklahoma City. I really do believe that. And it's not just because I'm here covering the team. You know, I've seen where this team has given a number of really good teams fits this season.
And I said last thing, this will be the last thing, I promise. If anybody's having a bad day out there, just if you want some context, you could be someone in the Washington Wizards front office. I don't know if you saw this, John, while we're talking.
Oh, my goodness.
John Wall, according to, well, virtually everybody that covers the NBA, suffered a ruptured Achilles at his home. Wall, in the first year of a 4-year, $170 million max deal, ruptured the Achilles. He'll miss at least 12 months. And anybody who has ever watched professional sports knows that players with Achilles are often not the same player when they come back after the Achilles has been repaired. If you're Washington, that's kind of worst nightmare stuff, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Because, I mean, that basically puts him out through next season.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's possible he comes back early by Christmas, I guess. But I mean, we're looking at the All-Star break next year. I was confused when I saw that notification come through. I thought, well, didn't he just have surgery?
Yeah, he did. And he did. He had an infection in that heel. They had to do an incision, and I don't know whether that's related to it or not. But he slipped and tears the Achilles, ruptures the Achilles.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like look at Wesley. You mentioned Wesley Matthews. Wesley Matthews in Portland was an all-star caliber, borderline elite NBA shooting guard. He ruptures his Achilles, and he's still a good player, but he's not the player he was. I mean, you know, it's almost impossible to come back. A couple of guys have done it, but it's just really hard to come back from that and be the same guy.
It is, and you know, like you mentioned, next year is the first year of that big contract. And look, I mean, John Wall, I think, was the source of a lot of the Wizards' issues earlier this season, just from a being a teammate standpoint. So he's not, I don't think, real positive in that department. If he can't come back and you know become an all-star type level player again, oh, that is one albatross of a contract for the Wizards. And that's what some people have worried about with this new Supermax deal. Would this come back to bite some teams in the end, you know, rewarding players like this, but, you know, crippling them from a cap standpoint? Boy, it sure feels like we're in step one of that for the Wizards right now.
It definitely does. Well, listen, I kept you longer than I said I would. I really appreciate your time. Big fan of your work, and look forward to following you as the playoffs approach. Thanks so much.
All right, man. Thanks.
That's John Hamm. John, really appreciate it. Our thanks to John Hamm for his time today. It's a busy time of the year for him. He talked to us on a Tuesday afternoon. The Thunder play Tuesday night against Orlando, so appreciate him taking some time out of a busy day to talk with us on the Beer Garden. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal. Might take a deep dive into college basketball as March Madness is getting closer and closer. What does it look like for the SEC? How many bids? Working on a couple of guests there. Also might talk some NFL offseason. It's never too early to start talking about the draft, to talk about which teams need to do what to position themselves for Super Bowl 54. And then baseball will be, by the time we meet again, baseball teams will either be in camp or they'll be awfully close to camp. As we tape this right now, Manny Machado's not signed. Bryce Harper's not signed. Dallas Keuchel's not signed. There's a lot of stuff in Major League Baseball that is sort of up in the air. There is a good bit of labor unrest, for lack of a better word. A lot of talk about a strike in 3 years, a work stoppage, whatever term you want to use. Can baseball survive another work stoppage? A lot of people think it could, but it would be critically damaged. We'll talk about those things. There's just a lot to talk about around the sports world, and that's what we do here on the Beer Garden. We kind of get away from a lot of the Ole Miss and SEC-centric stuff, and we take deep dives into other sports to kind of fill out and round out our family of podcasts. So, again, thanks to John Hamm. Thanks to everybody at the Oxford Crystal and LB's Meat Market, Community Mortgage, Strategic Partners in Media, Clark Ford for sponsoring this program. Couldn't do it without them. Appreciate all of their support. So until next week, take care.